Welcome to Inside Sponsorship, the show that provides sponsorship professionals with advice, insights, and news so they can maximize their commercial programs and achieve best practice.
Welcome to episode 3, the last of our initial launch of 3 episodes. I'm Daniel Oyston, the host of the show, and once again, it's great to have you listening to Inside Sponsorship. Now, I say initial launch of 3 episodes because we released the first 3 all in 1 week so that you've got lots to listen to right away, and so the show has a little bit of momentum. But from now on, we will be releasing the show for you every fortnight. Now, it's been a massive week putting together 3 shows for an initial launch and everything that comes with it, like conducting the interviews and editing and producing the show and getting them approved and into iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud and all the uploading and getting the artwork done and the emails and all that sort of stuff. It's been fun, but it's been a big week. And even if we do say so ourselves, we think the show's come up really well and hopefully the first 2 episodes have hit the mark for you. If you haven't listened to the first 2 episodes, then make sure you do because Anthony Grimmer took us inside Football Federation Victoria's Community and Business Program and Clint Cooper took us inside the Melbourne Stars Commercial Program. And both of those guys gave some real insight into what they are doing, but also some really practical advice. If this is your 3rd show, then congratulations. We'd love to hear from you and even give you a bit of a shout out on the next show. So be sure to get in touch. Of course, if you've got any feedback whatsoever on what we're doing, good or bad, we'd love to hear from you, including ideas for guests, topics, questions, or just anything that would make the show better for you. We've got another great episode for you as we catch up with Rachel Beeney, who is a freelance digital media specialist, and Rachel's going to take us inside running social media competitions for sponsors. But first, it's time for our regular segment with Mark Thompson as we discuss in more detail his latest blog. And this time, we talk about the 3 things it takes to be great at sponsorship management. Here's Mark. Mark Thompson, welcome back.
Thank you, Daniel.
3rd show.
Wow.
You're an old hand.
I know, I'm getting veteran.
Might have to have cake for a significant number, 21. I'll make a cake. Don't hold me to that. So this time, we're going to chat about how to be great at sponsorship. And I'm sure that sounds super exciting for all of our listeners. Their ears pricked up because everybody wants to be great at it, but you don't think knitting's going to help them, do you?
No, I heard a conversation a couple of weeks ago on the radio. A couple of DJs were talking about sport and as you do, I listen to those sorts of things. And they were talking about a recent cricket preseason, and a coach had their players practicing underwater swimming and running under the water.
Sounds like it's aligned to cricket.
And, well, the team actually didn't go very well at all and in the season. And one of the DJs said, you know, there's a line of thought out there that Ian Thorpe wasn't the world's best swimmer because he practiced his knitting. And what he meant by that was that Ian Thorpe was the world's best swimmer because he practiced his swimming. And I sort of started to think about, well, what actually would make you good at sponsorship?
If you trained and practiced and focused on it rather than just doing your job?
Yeah, and that doesn't mean, you know, turning up on a Thursday night with a bunch of sponsorship managers and pitching at each other and hanging signs and, you know, whatever.
And then going to the pub for a few beers afterwards.
Exactly right, I'm networking.
That was the best bit about playing sport for me.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's why you're not too bad at business. I sort of then started to try and relate that. And 3 things that align across almost any industry, any profession, being an athlete or being in business, working in sponsorship, all sort of resonate across that. And the 3 things I really looked at were preparation, systems and support, and practice and commitment.
Sure.
And if you can really nail all those things down in your sponsorship role, then you'll become really great.
So how do you prep for your sponsorship role?
There's sort of a couple of things. It's on the delivery side as well as on the sales side, and research into prospects and current sponsors is really important. You know, putting effort into scripting for approaches, organizing your work area, making sure you know what you need to deliver when, being prepared.
And if we drew all those 3 examples back to sport, that's like researching your opponents.
Yep.
Running your plays,
yep.
And having your dressing room organized, and you know what time you need to go out onto the field.
Yeah, and doing analysis on yourself. And
all that gives you great confidence because you are prepared.
Exactly right. And you're ready for the unknown. And any sponsorship manager will tell you that the unknown is the norm. It's, you know, someone will give you a phone call one day and expect something tomorrow. And if you're not organized, prepared, and don't have the great systems and support around you, which is the next point, then, you know, you're kind of destined to fail.
So systems and support?
Yep. So this is about sort of being able to deal seamlessly with your, you know, environment around you by having really good systems, by having a great support network, by being able to work collaboratively within your own environment. You know, good systems create efficiency, allowing you to make full use of your time. So by systems, I mean being, you know, organized, knowing what you need to deliver when, again, knowing what sponsors, you know, need what sort of attention, having that sort of internal integration across different business units. Now, sponsorship is one role of any organization that actually crosses over every single unit of the business.
Well, I wanted to bring up, I know in our, we've got a free ebook on the website called, I'm testing my knowledge here. So you're the new sponsorship management, here's what you need to do in the first 3 months or something along those lines. And one of the key things that we cover off in that book is that you need to get around and see everybody in the organization because you don't know when you might need to lean on them and ask for a favor.
Well, you know you're going to have to, but exactly right, you don't know when you need to and how much notice you're going to give them, and, you know, good relationships, but also the knowledge that sponsorship isn't its own little unit on the side. You know, the finance, the bottom line is driven by sponsorship. The performance KPIs of the executive are driven by sponsorship. The team's ability to have, you know, in sport, the team's ability to have the best equipment and things like that, they're driven by sponsorship, and not that sponsorship actually runs the whole organization. It's a real team effort, but
it's an enabler, isn't it?
It is an enabler, and it's also, you know, a real if the relationships are managed well, it's a real opportunity for you to actually get around and be, you know, really friendly, supportive of them as well, because they're going to want to come to you. And I think, again, in a sporting sense,
my sister needs some more tickets to the game.
Exactly right. Or, you know, we're running low on supplements this month. Do you reckon you could give our nutritional supplier a call and help us out?
Yeah. Is it fair to say that those people want to be involved and want to help on the sponsorship front, without taking the focus away from their day-to-day job, but they do see the importance and they're almost waiting for you to come and engage them?
Yeah, that's right. But if it's a closed shop, then they'll sort of just, you know, do their own job and look after their own backyard. But if you're an open book and you're, you know, collaborative in what you do and you expect to be, you know, helped back in return, then, you know, that's an open relationship. That's the systems and support side of thing, and it goes up and down the chain. It really is, you know, transitional.
So then we've got to be committed and we have to practice. That's the third thing. We've prepped, got our systems and support in place. Now we've got to practice and be committed, yeah?
Exactly. I touched this in our first podcast, and it is really around finding your groove. That's the practice side of it.
Mm.
You know, people have different ways of doing things well. You can't just go in a new role and just, you don't want to do exactly what the last person did, but you also don't want to assume what they did was not great. You know, people have different reasons for moving on from roles, but you've got to find your own way of doing stuff. And, you know, for me, it took years trying new things. I did a lot of failed pitches to sponsors before I started nailing them. But I found what was comfortable with me and I started landing those deals. And we spoke about that earlier, but also commitment to reaching your goals. So consistently approving, a dogged attitude to sell. Like, you know, people tell me that sometimes I'm a bit of a dog with a bone. You know, I don't try and offend anybody, but people know where I stand. They know what I'm there to try and do, and you know, we move on.
And ultimately, that's going to help the relationship get off on the right foot, because you're not one thing in the pitch and the wooing process and the sales funnel, and then they sign and then you turn into somebody else. That's an important point as well.
No, that's exactly right. And also, you know, one more thing on that commitment is the commitment to get better and the pursuit of innovation and meaningful relationships and really not resting until you have that better down across 100% of your role, through good systems, you know, innovative, you know, organisational support, and then meaningful relationships with all of your sponsors. You don't rest until all of that's bedded down.
So if we prepare, we've got systems and support in place, and we practice and we're committed, we're going to be great at sponsorship.
We will be great at sponsorship.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, mate.
Rachel Beeney is a freelance digital media specialist with a wide variety of experience in creating multimedia projects, social media, and online content. She's worked as an editor, a social strategist on social media execution, community management, and real-time social media integration. She's fluent in creating engaging content with a solid technical understanding of the web. And she's worked on social media campaigns for really big names like Microsoft, Aussie Home Loans, Network 10, MasterChef Australia, and a few others. And Rachel is passionate about teaching in a friendly and accessible way and helping people get the most out of digital and social media for their business. So that's why I asked Rachel to come on the show and take us inside running social media competitions for sponsors. Rachel Beeney from the business of exactly the same name, welcome to Inside Sponsorship.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks so much.
Not a problem. Now, you're a freelance digital media specialist. That sounds very important. So to set the scene to set the scene a little bit, what does that involve maybe on a day-to-day basis? And it might even help to maybe talk about a couple of projects you've worked on or clients you've worked with.
Sure. Well, a digital media specialist is a pretty varied role in that it can be doing like short-term contracts or long-term contracts across a whole variety of things. That could be creating a social media strategy or doing online community management or helping a campaign for a different company. So it's a pretty varied role, which is one of the things that I quite like about it. But that's sort of, it is kind of hard to explain in a nutshell, particularly what it is, just because there's so much to it.
Yeah, and I've worked. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, that's all right. Just through the clients that I've worked with, I've done some across my career. I've worked with Microsoft, Aussie Home Loans. I was at Network 10 for a long time, working across a heap of their broadcast shows, so MasterChef and The Bachelor, and now I'm doing freelancing.
Excellent.
So I've worked across, yeah, so it's been fun. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say that those sort of wide and maybe varied roles around digital and social is probably something that a lot of the sponsorship managers can relate to. Either they're selling those things to sponsors, or if they're in a smaller organisation, don't have a dedicated digital team, some of that's going to fall to them. So, look, digital and especially social media, it's such a big opportunity, but we often see people making mistakes, or maybe I shouldn't be so harsh and sort of call it missteps, maybe, okay, because maybe they don't know exactly what they should be doing. And I noticed such a mistake the other day with a sports team, and it prompted me to write a blog post titled "Why Your Facebook Competitions for Sponsors Suck." And then literally a day or two later, I saw your blog post, which was called 4 Mistakes You Need to Avoid When Running Competitions on Social Media. So I thought, let's get Rachel on for a chat, see if we can help add some value to sponsorship and partnership managers out there, especially considering that they often offer competitions and social media benefits to sponsors. So let's start with looking at staying on the right side of the law, because not only do we need to, just the general Australian law, but the various platforms have their own terms and conditions. I suppose that's a bit of a two-part question. So let's start with the actual law and then we can move on to platforms. What do we have to be aware of?
Sure. Well, with competition law within Australia, each state has a separate law, but the basics is that you've got a game of chance or a game of skill. And a game of chance is where you basically draw something out of a hat, where everyone who's entered has an equal chance of getting the same or submitting the same answer. And a game of skill is where people have a unique response. So that's something like a 25 words or less, so that you're judging someone based on the merit of their entry. So in New South Wales in particular, a game of skill has no permits associated with it, so it's free to run, but a game of chance does. So a lot of the competitions we see around the place are things like who's your favourite whatever, XYZ, tell us in 25 words or less. And that's because it's basically free to run and one of the easiest ones to run, which is why you see that around the place so often.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's fairly easy, isn't it? So let's so the various platforms. I don't know how we're going to do this. We might just start with with a couple of biggest ones because there's lots of different social media platforms. But what are some of the main things on the main platforms that maybe people just think that they can do, but really they're not allowed to?
Yeah, sure. It's something that it is perpetuated a bit because we see a lot of Facebook accounts, for example, like business pages, running competitions in a way that they probably shouldn't be. So we think that it's the norm, but it's actually breaching Facebook's rules. So it's kind of a little bit tough when we see other people doing it and think, oh, why can't I do that? But those pages do kind of risk having their pages shut down.
And it's pretty hard to get your page back up, isn't it?
Yeah, you basically need to start from scratch. I've not actually heard of anyone being able to get a page back after it's been shut down. But it doesn't happen too often. I haven't heard of too many people actually having that done. I guess most people I know stick to the terms and conditions of Facebook's page guidelines. But I will go into those guidelines now so that we actually know what we're on about.
I've got my pen and paper handy.
Oh, okay. I'll try and recite them all, but it might be best just to check out the Facebook page.
Actually, I'll put a link in the show notes for people.
That's a great idea. That would be most effective, I think. With Facebook, one of the most common things that you see that people can't do that they think they can do with competitions is to share a post. So saying, share this post to enter this contest. That's one of the things that people actually can't do on Facebook. It used to be a case that you couldn't comment on a Facebook post a few years ago, but that's actually since been changed, and you can comment on a Facebook page or a wall to enter a competition. So it's worthwhile just having a look at the Facebook page competition guidelines, which obviously you've got a link to in the show notes, to actually see what the current guidelines are in terms of that.
It does change, doesn't it? Because you just you just said there that you can comment now on a post as an entry mechanism, but a couple of years ago you couldn't use any of Facebook's functionality as part of the entry process because they wanted to distance themselves right away from being involved in any legalities of I didn't win or I posted and I didn't get I was the second person who posted and it didn't post, and so they distanced themselves. But I have noticed myself in the last couple of months that they've relaxed it a little bit. I'm not sure if you know why, but I don't.
And I guess maybe there was just the pressure of the crowd there. I can't say that I can read Mark Zuckerberg's mind, but yeah, it's definitely relaxed a little bit in the last few years.
So is there anything special we need to think about? Maybe probably Twitter and Instagram, the other two big platforms that a lot of commercial programs offer sponsors. Yeah, what are some of the big ones around that?
Sure. Well, luckily the Twitter and Instagram are a bit less, I guess, detailed or pedantic about what they require with their terms and conditions. So they basically just say things like, don't encourage users to set up multiple accounts. So their guidelines around competitions are pretty logical. It's basically saying, hey, don't spam our platform. Whereas Facebook's are a bit trickier around how they want to use the platform, whereas Instagram and Twitter, they're basically saying, look, you can run a competition, just don't abuse the platform. So it's you don't need to be too concerned about the platform guidelines for those platforms. And with Pinterest, you can basically do whatever you want, which is useful.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we've set up the competition. We've got our tell us your favorite player or destination or whatever it might be. We've got the competition idea. We've got we've set it up legally and we're in line with the platform's terms and conditions. But we're going to have to track and collate our entries. And clearly that's important because when we need to go and pick a winner, we need to be able to access all that information. What sort of mistakes do you see people making around that, and maybe what should they be doing up front?
Yeah, look, I actually see quite often that people say, oh, hey, I've run this great competition, and how do I find all the entries now to draw a winner?
Uh-oh.
And the problem, yeah, and it's really tough because it's actually pretty hard to go back on a lot of social networks, or it's very easily and find those entries. So people should sort of set up their tracking before they start their competition, especially if it's on something like Twitter where there can be, you know, hundreds of thousands of posts and you need to sort of have to manually search otherwise. So you can't backdate with a lot of searches unless you have some very expensive social media tracking software, which I think is out of the realms of most mortal men. So you kind of just need to, yeah, so I would recommend setting up social media tracking before starting the competition.
Okay, great. Have you got any tips around how to do that, where people should go looking to do that?
Yeah, look, there are some really simple tools that can integrate things like Twitter with Google Docs. So there's a website called If This Then That. And what that means is you can say, if someone uses this hashtag on Twitter, then pull it into this Google Doc. So you can do some things to help automate that process. If you've got something like Hootsuite, you could create a search column for that. I believe Stackler as well is one of the tools that you can use to pull in different searches. But one of the things I would mention before I forget about it is that not all platforms actually allow you to track posts through third-party means. So if you're wanting to track things, like if you're wanting to track hashtags on Facebook, you actually can't do that through a third-party platform. So you will need, if you're doing a wall-based entry mechanism, you'll need to just find those entries one by one and save them to a spreadsheet somewhere. So
I'm glad that's somebody else's job.
Yeah, I think that's where you hire an intern for that one.
Give it to the work experience kid. So, well, actually, as you were talking about the tracking, what hadn't occurred to me prior before I started thinking about what you and I were going to chat about is that for those sponsorship professionals that are listening, that it's probably good practice to not just track it so you can administer your program, but actually if you're running the competition on behalf of a sponsor, to be able to show the sponsor what the entries have been, because they're going to want to know whether 3 people entered the competition or 3,500 people entered the competition.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It makes it a lot easier to show the return on investment if you have some solid numbers behind you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about some terms and conditions for my competition or their competition? They're going to be important, but people don't read them. So do we really need them? I don't read them.
Since I started running competitions, I've suddenly started reading terms and conditions a lot more than I used to. The thing is that terms and conditions are kind of important for the emergency situations where there might be a dispute with the winner or with a runner-up, or someone's lost their prize or it didn't reach them in the mail. They're really good as a backup to say, well, actually, we've already sort of covered this problem here, so here's how we're going to rule this decision. So it means that it sort of stops things from turning into a he said she said kind of argument. The terms and conditions are useful because it sets everything from the outset and it avoids potentially tricky situations.
Yeah, and so, tricky situations are things that are probably going to take up a lot of your time where you're not actually doing your proper job.
Yeah. Totally. So just by thinking about some of that stuff beforehand and popping those in some terms and conditions means that you save yourself a headache later on.
Yeah, I'm all for that. So you've actually pulled together the ultimate checklist for creating competitions for social media, and I've taken a look at it, and it's a great practical resource, and I'm definitely going to put a link to it in the blog with the show notes.
Great.
So we're legal, we're tracking, we have terms and conditions, and we've run the competition, and it was a massive success in terms of entries. and we now have to pick a winner. That seems pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, well, I think the picking the winner part can be pretty straightforward, but actually getting in touch with the winner can be a bit tricky. So it's one of the things that I've noticed is that especially if you're doing a competition that's in either on Instagram or on Twitter, the only way to kind of get in touch with them is just to sort of send a tweet to them or post on the Instagram wall. and or Instagram
feed. You don't stalk
feed,
them and turn up to their house?
Yeah, you could if you wanted to. Yeah,
with a 65-inch TV.
that's one option. Yeah. I'd probably not recommend that one, but okay. You know, whatever floats your boat. So one of the things that can be tricky is actually contacting them in order to tell them they've won. And it can be tricky because if someone's entered this competition, say they don't use Instagram all that often, and if they've won and they haven't logged in for a week or maybe a month, maybe what you'll find is that you've told them they've won, but they haven't actually gotten in touch with you. And so you're kind of just sitting and twiddling your thumbs, hoping that they know they've won. So one of the things you can do is actually put in your terms and conditions, if you know, we've contacted you and you haven't gotten in touch with us within, say, a week or a month, then we can reselect the winner. So that's one way you can do it. But I'd suggest doing something like writing on their, either tweeting them or writing on their post saying, hi, you've won this, please contact us at this email address in order to get in touch. Yeah. And I'd probably use a dummy email address like info@mywebsite.com rather than putting out your phone number, because then every man and his dog will be signing you up to the latest deals.
Yeah, right. So it's interesting that what we'd probably call the second chance. Well, it's not really a second chance draw, but it's a redraw, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm based in Canberra, Australia, and I know you mentioned about the different running competition laws in the different states and territories in Australia. Uh-huh. I know in Canberra, if you run a competition that is a game of chance, so you have to register it, you actually have to spend a fair bit of time outlining when and where the second chance or redraw will take place and what dates and what times and everything. I've only ever had to do it once, but it was a lot. And I was doing it for a client and I had a home office. And like in the end, I just put my house as the redraw address. No one turned up, lucky, but people should look into that. Yeah, because you might have to actually specify.
No one reads terms.
Yeah, that's right. No one reads So what is what's your experience and maybe some recommendations around using third-party apps, things like Woobox, which I've got a little bit of experience with, or Shortstack, to help manage all of this, to help those who don't know about the third-party apps? Maybe it might be good just to give a little bit of a brief outline about what they do and how they might be able to help people.
Yeah, sure. So Woobox and Shortstack are like small little mini websites that you can use to run your competitions, and you can embed them in Facebook and I believe also in your website, depending on which one you're using. And what they can do is they can run your competitions for you in terms of managing people entering the contest. They aggregate all your entries so you can export them and you can find a winner quite easily in their system. And they're also quite... they also have these great templates, so it all looks really well designed. So you don't need to be a graphic designer or a web developer to come up with some really nice looking competition entry tools.
Yeah, so it makes all those little things that seem like it'll probably take everybody about a day to get organized. You can do it in about half an hour maybe with one of those programs.
Yeah, it definitely makes it a lot faster, and it means that you don't need to be worrying about trying to aggregate all your social media responses or anything like that.
Yeah. And I think with Woobox, it's that's the only one that I've used, but I know it's got some great, you spoke about templates, but it's got some great sort of, the ideas and the templates are pretty linked together. So you might say, choose your favorite photo template to run the competition, or what's the answer template to run a competition. And it's really easy and really simple to sort of integrate into your social media, and makes, I think, the experience and the entry really easy. But for me, with my marketing background, my goal is always to build an audience. And the thing that I love about these third-party apps is they can give you the ability to capture people's email addresses in the entry mechanism, which you, particularly if you're running that on behalf of a sponsor, if one of their goals is to build leads or generate sales, then that's definitely something that they're going to be attracted to.
Yeah, exactly. I think that if your objective is to get conversions and get people's email addresses or to reward advocates. I think that they're a really good solution for getting that extra data. But I think if it does depend on what your objective of your competition is. If you're wanting to get reach and you're wanting to get lots of people tweeting about something, it's probably not the right entry mechanism for you. But if you are wanting that depth of data, then it's something that is quite easy to set up and looks quite professional and isn't too expensive either. I think it's just a fairly affordable model in order to access them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You just took the words out of my mouth. I think I think maybe I should have led with this question, but I think a key thing for anybody running a competition, remembering that our audience, they're often going to be running it with a sponsor in mind or for a sponsor or part of the sponsorship. It's about the goals or the benefits the competition helps with. Why would we be running competitions? Because surely it's not just about giving away free stuff from the prize cupboard.
Yeah. It can sometimes feel a bit like you're just sort of doing that, but it's in the end it's all marketing, right? Like that's what competitions are for. So it's really about working out what the objective is and who you're trying to actually reach with your competition. So if you're wanting to reach a new audience, or if you're wanting to engage an existing audience, it's really working about who you're trying to reach, and that'll determine the kind of competition that you run. So if you're wanting to reach new people, things like using a Twitter contest or an Instagram contest might be good to get some external reach.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to get new Facebook fans, you could use something like WooBox and make a competition only accessible to fans. Or if you're wanting to do something to get, you know, to get a stronger relationship with your advocates, it might be like a 25 words or less contest. Again, with maybe on your wall or with something like WooBox, that only your most passionate fans would engage with. And it's really about engaging with the culture of those groups as well. So it's about really, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you spoke about the culture and the passion of the audience. Mm. And I think for those sponsorship and commercial professionals, because we also have people in events and the arts and other organisations, but sponsorship's, you know, got a fairly strong tie to sport. And that culture and that passion of the audience is pretty at the fore when you're talking about sports fans. So talk to us about reach on the main platforms, because there's a common misconception that, for example, if you have something like 20,000 page likes on Facebook, then a lot of people think that when we post something, those 20,000 people that like our page, they're all going to see it.
Yeah, it is a huge misconception. The reality is that on Facebook, that only reaches 1% of the fans organically, or between 1 and 10%, I think, depending on how Facebook is feeling that day. But generally, it's around 1%, which is considerably smaller than the 20,000 that some people might think that they're already reaching. It is a lot less than you'd think. But there are ways to work around that, and that's just through having some, alternate marketing strategies, and not relying on that one single post.
So considering some platforms limit their reach, but maybe even if they don't limit their reach, it doesn't guarantee that everyone will see the post about a competition. What are some tactics we can use to get the competition in front of as many people as possible? Maybe the right audience, because just because you get it in front of as many people as possible doesn't mean they're the right people, but sometimes it's about reach, sometimes it's targeted,
Totally. And again, that comes back to your objectives of the contest. It's really around having a marketing strategy that really complements the contest. So I would say at a minimum, if you've got a competition running, posting about it at least 3 times a week on all of your social networks. So just having an understanding of making sure that you actually are getting the message out there. And it might feel like it's excessive, but when, you know, coming from a TV background, one of the things that I always think about is that when a new show is launching, every ad break you see a new show is launching.
Oh, here come the Habibs.
Yeah. So it really reinforces the message every time you see an ad for a new show and you're like, oh, yeah, I need to enter that. So sometimes it might feel like you're promoting a post, promoting competition too often, but if someone's not seeing it every single time, or your audience is, you know, might see it once and then come back the next day and be like, oh, yeah, I forgot to enter that, sometimes actually just strategically posting multiple times throughout the competition period is a really effective way of doing it. But also just making sure that post, each post is unique as well. So making sure it has a unique language or maybe a unique picture, or it's a different angle to the prize if there's multiple elements to it. So it's making sure it's not the exact same message, but, you know, it's part of a family of messages where everyone can see it's sort of, you know, this is the same competition, but here are different hooks to engage different people.
Yeah, I like that advice. The different hooks is a great one. What about posting it and then either boosting it just generally to just your page fans or people in your target audience maybe?
Yeah, totally. That's definitely a really effective way. Facebook posts or boosting posts isn't actually as expensive as a lot of people would think. You can reach a pretty large audience with maybe $10 or $100, and that can reach a sizable size of your audience. And then, of course, it's just really and whether you're targeting your page or an external audience, it's just being really smart about thinking, who is the audience I want to reach? What kind of Facebook pages are they liking so I can target that? And what are the demographics, just so that you're not wasting money where people, you know, where it isn't your audience. So it's definitely something to consider.
Yeah, I'd agree. Can you give us an example of a really good competition that you've run or even just seen and talk through some of the elements that made it good?
Yeah, sure. I'll talk through a couple of examples that I've seen rather than ones that I've run, just because I think that I've got some examples that are a bit more of a sporting skew, because I know that's where a lot of sponsors' audience is.
Yep, great.
So forgive me if I don't quite get all the finer details of it.
That's all right. How about I help you?
Okay, we'll do a team effort.
Okay.
So one of the core things that I think is important with a contest, which I think I've mentioned earlier, is around really tapping into the culture of a contest. So what makes a contest or competition run effectively or get a lot of entries is that it taps into something that people kind of do already around the culture of that thing. So whether it's, you know, for example, with Taste Magazine, they have a Cook the Cover competition every single month. And because people already cook the recipes on the cover of the magazine and Instagram, they've got a competition which is send us your Instagram pictures and you can win a prize.
It's an extension,
so it's
isn't
into,
it?
Sorry?
It's an extension of what they're already doing.
Yes, exactly right. So it's extending the culture of what people already do, but you're kind of just rewarding people for that. And that makes competitions run most smoothly because you can see that it's behavior or traits that people are already engaging with. So just, I guess, on that into some examples is that earlier this year there was a competition as part of Big Bash League, which was the Backyard Legends competition. I don't know if that's one that you saw, where it was where during the cricket people would send in videos of them playing backyard cricket and basically getting hurt in the process of playing backyard cricket.
I did see that.
Yes.
It was like Australia's funniest home videos, but backyard cricket.
Exactly. And so it kind of taps into a culture that's already there of like playing backyard cricket and someone always gets hurt. So I thought that was a really smart competition because it tapped into this culture that was already there. And because it's basically asking people to send in viral videos, it also had the benefit of reach because as soon as you saw a funny one, you'd share it with your friends as well. So I thought that one was very smart in that it was playing on that culture.
Yeah, and I think that one was really good too because it played on the on user-generated content, which for the listeners, if you're not aware, user-generated content is where you basically get your audience to create content that you can use to promote your brand. So the cricket videos were coming in and they're all run around the segment with the sponsor and all that sort of stuff. And then the other thing that I think is really good about that one is it gives people the ability to have their 5 seconds of fame.
I thought it was very well executed because it did have all of those elements to it. And user-generated content often isn't actually very easy to execute because there's usually really high barriers to entry because a lot of people need to do things and often it's a bit too hard. But I think this had a really great hook in that, you know, you get to show it in front of everyone on TV and you get to kind of, you know, maybe embarrass your mate who got hit in the head or whatever. So I think that it worked really well because of that. One of the other ones I've got is ESPN did the Ultimate NBA Fan Contest. I think it was either earlier this year or last year,
right.
which was again a user generated video contest, which was show us how you're the ultimate NBA fan. And so people had to post a video on either Twitter or Instagram or Facebook about how they are an awesome NBA fan. And I thought that the thing that I like about, or what I think is a good example with this case study, is that it's a huge amount of effort, but the actual prize made that effort worth it. So the fans ended up heading over to the US to watch the Lakers play and had behind-the-scenes access. So it was this gigantic prize. And so the fact that people were there creating these crazy videos to show that they're the biggest NBA fan was actually balanced out by the fact that the prize was so big. I think that often when people create user-generated contests, the prize doesn't necessarily justify the amount of effort people need to put in to enter. So I think this worked really well because it had a huge barrier to entry in terms of the effort, but it had a huge prize. And I thought that worked out really well.
Yeah, and I think the extension, like you were talking earlier about tapping into the culture and what people are already doing. They're already watch the sport. They maybe even go to the games. But because the prize is aligned to the actual content, that's a natural extension. So you can see that the three or four elements of the competition idea, what the person entering the competition is already doing, and the prize. If you can make those things line up in a straight line, it almost creates a really easy path for people to be engaged in the competition.
It does. And it's something that requires a little bit of planning beforehand to think, is this something that really matches something that my audience does or likes, or is this the way they behave already? And so you kind of need to put on your thinking hat a little bit to make sure it does align that way. But when it does, it makes it a lot smoother and you get a lot more entries and a lot more engagement because of it.
So a competition needs to have some sort of idea or foundation, like we've just been speaking about, like caption this image or who's your favorite player or generate some content and send it into us as the entry. What are some competition ideas people can consider?
Yeah, sure. So I think that as I've sort of said, like at its core, it really does need to be around what your community is doing already. And I think one of the simplest ways you can think about it is what is most effective in my community, and is there a way to turn that into a competition? So with the example earlier where I was talking about Taste Magazine, where it has Cook the Cover, it's something that people are already doing. If you've got if you create a game on your Facebook page where you Photoshop out a soccer ball and you put a grid on there and you say, where is the soccer ball in this picture? If that's the kind of thing that appeals to your audience, then turn that into a competition. So it could be things like, So for ideas, 25 words or less, again, it's simple, it's effective, it's easy to judge. But you could also do things like a caption this. If that appeals to your audience, then it is worth testing first. You could do a call out with people to take a photo of whatever, you know, at you at the game or you getting involved, well, you know, like Backyard Legends, right? So you're playing your version of backyard cricket and
Yeah, it's
hurting other people in the process.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was just thinking about another marketing concept. So, and that is the buyer journey and mapping out the journey somebody goes on. Went from, you know, I've got a problem right through to buying and then using your product or service. And I think we can probably extend that concept because if we stay on the sports track, if you can map out what your fans' common week looks like, and you might have a couple of different personas, you know, you might have the younger audience who go to school, you might have the older audience who go to work, but if you can map out their, not buyer journey, but maybe just their standard week and figure out what activities are they doing. They're taking their kids to football sessions. They're parking their car at the game. They're going to dinner afterwards. They're going to work. They're on the bus. And that may throw up some opportunities for you to create competitions and extend some of those things that those people are doing already naturally, like cook the cover do.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be based on like banter that they usually have anyway. So maybe there's an in-joke that's within the culture of a particular sport or a particular team. And it's kind of piggybacking off stuff that's already there and really drawing it out.
Yeah.
One of the other ideas that I also had that might be useful, especially if you've got brand ambassadors with your sponsorships, is that a competition question could quite easily just be, hey, post a question for so-and-so. We've got them in, they're coming in next week to answer them. If you post the most interesting question, we'll ask it and you also win, whatever. So if you've already got those other opportunities to work with brand ambassadors, you can also use that to weave that into your competition and create a bit more reach and a bit more, another reason for people to talk about the contest.
Yeah, I think those comments that you've been making around things that your fans might be engaged with already and turning those into competitions. You had just mentioned brand ambassadors and asking questions. And I'm an avid Hawthorn supporter. And one of the things that Hawthorn do during the season is a bit of a sort of a 60 to sort of 90, 120 second interview where one player goes and sits with another player. And it's all very jovial. Mm-hmm. But the fans sending questions, it would be really easy for those guys to have that that segment sponsored. Well, I think it is sponsored, to be honest, but extend that into a competition where it encourages more questions to come in. It's something they're totally already doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Rachel, that was a great chat. If people want to get in touch with you, find out more about what you do, etc., where should they go?
Sure. Well, they can head to my website, which is rachelbeanie.com. And otherwise, I'm on Twitter, and my handle is Beanie, which is my last name, which is B-A-N-E-Y, which hopefully will be in the comments because it's a bit tricky to catch sometimes. And I'm also on Facebook as well.
Cool. Well, we'll put links in the show notes to all of those. Rachel Beanie, on behalf of the listeners, thank you so much for taking us inside social media competitions.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
What an awesome chat with Rachel. It was just chock-a-block full of really practical advice, but also some bigger thinking that I think you can all apply to not just your social media competitions for sponsors, but your digital assets more widely. Be sure to head along to the show notes at sponsorv.net for links to Rachel's site and her social media accounts, but also her super awesome ultimate checklist for creating competitions for social media. And I've also put a link to Facebook's competition terms and conditions. Now, don't worry, those terms and conditions are not long at all. They're just a few paragraphs. So there should be no excuse for you not being across them. And we certainly don't want you having to explain to your boss why your whole organization's page was taken down because you didn't follow the rules. Also, as always, thanks to Mark for spending some time with us and discussing the three things that it takes to be great at sponsorship management. If you aren't already, be sure to subscribe to receive all of our content straight into your inbox. Simply head to any of the blogs or podcasts at sponsorv.net and fill in the subscription form at the bottom. Now, also, Mark Thompson, off air, promised me that he'd personally buy you a beer or a wine or maybe a coffee if that's how you roll, if you can head along to iTunes and leave us a short review because it really does help us get the show out to more people. If you want to be even more connected to Sponserve, then you can find Sponserve on Facebook and Twitter or connect with Mark Thompson or myself, Daniel Oyston, on LinkedIn. Finally, if you have an idea for a guest or just a generic topic, a segment idea, or even a question, be sure to get in contact and we will see if we can include it in the show. Or just shoot us an email and say hi and we'll give you a shout out. Until next time, thanks for listening to Inside Sponsorship.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more episodes, blogs and resources, head to sponserve.net or search for Sponserve on Facebook, Twitter or LinkedIn.